This is Amateur Logic, episode 206, for June 20th, 2025. Amateur Logic is brought to you by ICOM. Whether you're logging contacts from a remote site or contesting with your club, ICOM has the gear to keep you connected, competitive, and in control. Good evening. Welcome to another exciting episode of Amateur Logic. I'm George.
I'm Tommy.
I'm you.
And I'm Mike.
And we have a show lined up for you tonight.
It's always not an action-packed show.
Exciting. It's a hot time in the Old South here tonight. 94 degrees here today. Emil, you probably had us by.
It had to be close to the hundreds. My truck was telling me it was in the hundreds when we just went out just a bit ago. So it's close and it's humid. When you mix those two together, it just gets all that more fun.
It reminds you of field day, doesn't it?
Yeah. Field day is definitely right around the corner.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking when I looked up in my little remote temperature sensor is right under the awning here on the shack. It was like 104.9. But it's always.
So that would be in the shade then, would it?
That was in the shade. Under a tin awning.
It can't be ever accurate, though.
I don't know. If you got up there next to that.
Well, it
tin,
might be accurate right there, but like the regular.
No,
it's. Out of their shade tree's not.
82.6, but it feels like 90. So it's coming down because it's getting dark. But
82,
wow.
That's almost winter.
How are things up in Canada? It looks nice and pleasant and green up there.
Actually, it is green here, although some areas have gotten rain and others not so much. I'm kind of in the not so much category, but for most part, it's still green around here. Things are supposed to really heat up by Sunday. And when I say that, let's see if I can convert this in my head here. I'll quote it in Fahrenheit. I think they're calling for like 96 on Monday Fahrenheit.
Oh, wow.
So
that's pretty hot for there.
It is very hot for here.
Have AC in your house, don't you?
Yes.
No, some people don't.
When I moved up here back in the late 80s, actually it was in the early 90s where I'm at now, but a lot of folks didn't have air conditioning. They didn't have air conditioning in their vehicles either, but that's changed. It's rare to find someone without air conditioning either in their vehicle or in their home.
You're not going to find anybody without it down here. No. On purpose.
Not since I was a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I went to school, we were talking about that today. When I went to school, we didn't have AC in our schools. Thankfully, you could open the windows, but it still got pretty hot. Nowadays, I think most of the schools have AC, and the windows don't even open up for good reason.
Tommy, was this an email that you got?
It's a legit email, not an email.
Okay.
I said legit. No, not that you're not legit. Okay. Anyway, this is from our friend Elliot, K1MF. He's been a good friend of the show for a long time. Shortly after you filmed your DVAT Pi project, I built one for myself. It worked flawlessly for years, and I moved a bit, got some hats for the Pi, zoom spots, eventually open spot 2 and 4 plus. During one of my cleanups, I ran across my DVAT Pi, which has been in service since 2016. Much to my surprise, which floored me, the battery for the system, the Pi is resting on top of it in the picture there. Still had power to boot up. Said it connected to Reflector 30 Charlie on its first try. Needless to say, I charged a hotspot in the battery for system project and can say it's back in the vehicle. It was removed prior to going in for service and kept paying the monthly rate for the hotspot. Very low monthly charge. I'll have to find out who that's from.
Looks like AT&T.
Because I knew I would need it someday, which was yesterday when the internet service of the house was down. So it goes to DVAT Pi, continues its life. Cheers, Elliot, K1MF. That's pretty cool. You know, I found my DVAT. I actually kind of forgot I had that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe it was Elliot or somebody asked it one time about doing a revamp of the DVAP Pi project. Kind of wondering how many people out there still have the DVAPs and use them. I don't even know if they sell them anymore.
I don't know.
But anyway, if anybody's interested in seeing a revamped DVAP project, bringing those old ones back to life, let me know. I might do something like that. I've kind of thought about it. Yeah.
Mike, we may have to do something with our Northwest Digital. What were those things we...
I actually have mine working still. The DV2000, I think they called it.
Yeah.
And then they called it the heck was that thing called? Pi DV, I think it was called. I still have mine. What's it running now? I can't even remember, but it's still running. I can see the lights flashing. But I can't remember what it's doing. So I've got about four pies and I've kind of forgotten what each one's doing. I know one of them's doing, a DV switch and the other one's doing
the black hole pie.
Yeah, that one. I've got that one running and another one, but I've been playing in the greenhouse and outside too much. I haven't been playing radio.
First up tonight, Tommy actually has a radio project here.
It's not really a project. I got a new toy. Kind of show it.
That works for me.
Yeah. I decided to take a break from the Meshtastic stuff this month. I did get another toy. I got I've had this for a little while. Some of you may remember me mentioning wanting to get a Tiny SA Ultra. I didn't get that. I ran across this HackRF Portapak H4M device. It's basically a SDR with a computer and a screen, touch screen to run it. It's got a self-contained battery and you can take it with you, hook it up to different antennas. I don't know if it's going to be a replacement for the Tiny SA Ultra or not. It's still pretty cool. I think I've been having a good time with it. I think I got a lot more fun to have with it. So let's take a look at the device. It's got a touch screen, color touch screen. On the top we've got two switches. One's the power switch. And the other one is a switch to change between the internal microphone and an external. On the bottom, we've got a headphone jack, USB-C to charge it, and then we've got a clock sync in and out. On the other end, we've got a reset, a DFU button, some lights for operational. There's labels on the bottom, and then an SMA jack on the top as well. To charge the thing, it charges off of USB-C. This is the one thing that I really don't care about it too much, but you have to leave the power on for it to charge. So you can plug it in, and it comes on without the switch on. But if you don't turn the switch on, it will not charge. This is actually navigation. It's got a four-way to move the cursor, and you can also turn it by turning this inner knob. To select something, you just click the middle of it. Let's go up to the top and look at the battery. We bring up the battery status and you can see it says it's got 95%, 4.1 volts. The monitoring part right now is voltage. I'll talk about that in a minute. 751 milliamps. It's charging and it's got about an hour and 10 minutes left to charge. But there's a button here for IC or voltage. And that changes how the percentage is calculated for the remaining. The IC is supposed to be smart and go by the usage of the device and how much capacity is in there to show you the percentage that you can keep using it. But it doesn't seem to work too well for me. It's supposed to learn as you go along, and perhaps I haven't let it run long enough. But I keep it on voltage. That's more seems more consistent for me. Go back. It's got a built-in speaker. Where the ones before did not, you had to hook up an external speaker for it. So it's got a volume up here at the top. And I think that's it. Yeah. So you can see the little icon turned on when I clicked it. Turn it back off. I usually leave it off unless I'm trying to listen to something. Speaker's not that great, but it's nice to have. It's better than nothing. Let's give a once over the menu this time. And then we'll come back another time and go into depth into some of them. So we've got a receive menu that's got a lot of apps under it, transmit. The range this thing works with, I believe, is 1 megahertz up to 6 gigahertz, which that's a lot of spectrum. If you're not licensed,
for something, do not transmit on it. So just don't. So we've got receive, transmit, capture, and replay, which capture, you can go into there and pick a frequency and a mode, and it'll basically record whatever you're doing. So you can record QSOs, ham QSOs. But the replay is where you would go pick the file that you just recorded or record at some point and play it back. We have a remote app. You can record certain things and play them back to, for your own remote, like your ceiling fan or something like that. Scanner, which is pretty nice. You can have a low and a high range and scan. And as it finds things, it'll stop, shows the frequency, and it'll actually play the audio. Let's turn the audio on and see what we've got. Probably not going to get anything. So the audio's on. There we go, 145.72. But it's just noise right now. I don't have an antenna hooked up other than this little telescopic, and it's down. Turn that sound back off for now. Okay, we've got microphone. Test 1, 2. See, there's a microphone in here. And you can actually transmit. So it's got 146.44 frequency in here. But you can actually transmit on this thing and use it as a handy talkie somewhat. I haven't tried that either, but it does have the capability. Looking glass, which is essentially just a waterfall display, so it allows you to look for things, kind of like the audio app that you'll see in a moment. One cool thing is it's got a HEC RF mode, which inside this thing is, there's hardware here, like a mini computer type thing, microcontroller, but there's also a full-fledged HEC RF SDR board in here. If you turn it on HEC RF mode and click yes, it will put it into SDR device mode, which bypasses all the built-in hardware and uses only the SDR in here. So you can hook that up to your computer with your USB cable, hook an antenna up, and use it with any other SDR software that you've got, which is cool. I haven't used that yet, but I like the idea of it. One thing I forgot to mention, when you're charging, the device has to be on, but you can click this little toenail or moon thing up here. It looks like a cut toenail to me. But click that and it turns the screen off, so you don't have to leave the screen on the whole time it's charging if you're not using the device. The little camera that takes a screenshot saves it to the SD card. That's actually another thing I forgot to mention. There is a micro SD card in here I put in. I think I got put a 32 gig in there. Now we go into the receive menu. So go into there. We've got ADS-B where you can pick up the airplanes when they come by. Let's see if anything's nearby. Actually, there's one. A9F382. But if it's got a good signal and it's sending information, that you can click on that and see it on the map. There. Okay, so there you see the little target right there. So if you click that, you see more details about it. Last time we heard it was 1 second ago. It's Delta Airlines. There's the position, and we see it on the map. It'll bring up a map, and you can going to actually see the position of it. Go back out of here. AIS boats is essentially the same thing for boats. We got APRS mode. So two apps on here that are ham specific. APRS being one of them. And we don't have a lot of APRS activity here. There are a few guys that run it. But I saw my buddy Bobby on here a few days ago, and I had it hooked up to my external antenna. But you'll see the call signs and everything on here. Audio is essentially just a listening spectrum analyzer type waterfall type thing, kind of like your SDR Uno software, but not near as full featured, but that's the idea of it. You can pick your frequency. Oops, audio. I'll pick one of the local radio stations or something just to have something to hear. So 106.7, and let's turn the audio on. Not gonna leave it on long because we'll get a copyright strike from it. I don't hear it because it's on spectrum mode. So we go back down. See that SPEC? That means it's on spectrum analyzer mode. And we can turn the little knob. That's AM, narrow FM, wide FM. So I'm hoping you can hear that. You can change the bandwidth on that. Let's go back in there. So I'll put it back on spectrum right there. We go down here, we can change the bandwidth. 20 megahertz, 3 megahertz, 5. And you can see the 500K on either side of the center line. 2 megahertz, 300K on every on the other side of the center line. Bluetooth low energy receive. A lot of Bluetooth things here at my house. So, ERT meter, I think that is. I believe that's where you can like read the water meter type data, stuff like that. I had something coming in here earlier on it. So a lot of this stuff is not, there's things that I'm not 100% familiar with, but I'll explore it some more later. There's one. I don't know what that exactly what it is. But it's receiving something, whatever it is. We got levels, which is another receive type thing. I'm not sure what this is actually representing. Decibel, dB power. So I guess basically signal strength. POCSAG, which is, I believe that's protocol used for pagers. Radio Sunday, I believe that's weather balloons. Recon, which is another scanner type app for finding things to listen to. Search, another one. So each one of them are a little bit different. There's a sub gigahertz. There's weather for weather stations. Not the weather balloons, but like if you have a weather station. So that would pick up some of that data. There's a temp, humidity, things like that on there. AFSK, like PSK type thing. ProtoView, no idea exactly what that really is either. Some of you guys may, so if you have ideas what some of it is, feel free to share with me. If you think about it, drop me an email. But like I said, I don't pretend to know everything on here, but I like to figure things out, share it with you, take you along for the ride. TPMS, receive, I know that's tire pressure monitoring system, so you can pick up people's tire pressures on there for some, whatever reason you want to do that. NRF, there's fox hunt here, which is pretty interesting to me. I haven't used it yet, but I've been in here looking around. You go in there and it's right now it's on 146.52, not picking up anything. But there's a little arrow. I'm assuming that you can use this and it'll help you get to the strongest signal. You would definitely want to attenuate it though. But you can do that by going here. There's two amplifiers and you can adjust the values of them and reduce the sensitivity. Need to learn a little bit more about which one is which. But you can attenuate your signal for fox hunting using that. Let's go down and see what else is down there. Oh, analog TV. I'm not sure if you can see it, but there's a little, almost a little TV display there, square. But there's nothing around here that I know of. You may be able to pick up FPV drone transmitters if there's one close by. I actually have one. I'm going to try that sometime and see if I can get it. If I do, I'll share it with you. But anyway, it would basically display the image on your screen here, which I thought was pretty cool, if I could find anything to look at with it. Then we got FM radio. So I put a few presets in here. You can see the signal, the audio waveform up there at the top. So I'll pick one. Okay. Oh, let me turn the sound back on. There's one. There's the country one. There's a pop station around here. So that's it for the receive section. There's the transmit section. Again, I haven't really been in here. POCSAG transmitter, ADS, soundboard, sound painter, jammer. But anyway, I got mine from OpenSDR Labs. They're out of China, but I bought it from the U.S. Shipping place here, which gets you away from having to pay the tariffs, but the price is double. Now, I did not pay this $300 price when I got it. I got mine before all that came into play, so I paid about $200 for shipping and everything for mine, roughly. A little bit less than $200, I think. But anyway, that's kind of how they are nowadays. Pretty neat little device. I look forward to doing some other segments on some of these individual apps in here. I don't think it's going to replace a real tiny SA Ultra. It's still kind of cool little device. Just be careful if you get one. Don't get yourself in trouble. Don't do anything you're not licensed for. 73.
73, Tommy.
Very 74. Good.
Yeah.
Whatever it takes.
But I do have a question for you, Tommy.
Okay.
Have you landed yourself on any no-fly lists?
No. I haven't been I haven't even flown anywhere since I got it. But no. And I haven't done anything with the transmit part on it. You can get yourself in a lot of trouble with that thing, so you need to be very careful if you get one.
Yeah, I wouldn't touch that button that said jammer.
No. No.
The first thing I was thinking of too, Tommy, is the ProtoView. Is that like where it detects the digital modes that's coming through?
I'm not sure what that is. I need to try to look into that a little bit deeper. I'm not sure. There's so much on there, I haven't really had time to go through all of it yet. It's a pretty cool little device, though. But it's not going to replace the Tiny SA, because I haven't seen any place to do measurements or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's basically a pocket SDR.
It had some neat stuff on it.
Yeah, I think so. I'm dying to play with the Fox Hunt stuff, see how that works. I think there was a Fox Hunt transmitter and a Fox Hunt receiver on there.
Cool.
Nice.
Well,
see how it works.
We're going to be back in just a moment because we got a lot more to go, so don't go away. Summer's on the horizon, and for amateur radio operators, that means one thing. Field Day is almost here. Mark your calendars for June 28th through 29th. When hams across the country head outdoors, fire up their rigs, and put their skills to the test. Whether you're logging contacts from a remote site or contesting with your club, ICOM has the gear to keep you connected, competitive, and in control. Remote ready, contest capable, and built for serious signal, step into the future of amateur radio with ICOM's powerhouse trio. The IC7760 HF digital transceiver, the ICPW2 1 kilowatt HF 50 megahertz linear amplifier, and the all-new RC7760 remote controller. Designed to work in perfect harmony, this system offers full remote operation, high output power, and seamless integration across the bands. The RC7760 remote controller serves as an extra control head, and up to 5 can be registered to the RF deck, though only 1 can be active at a time. For wireless connectivity, simply connect a commercially available Wi-Fi access point via the LAN port. Whether you're working from the shack, the field, or a remote site, you'll experience crystal clear audio, digital precision, and amplifier-grade power, all from a single, unified interface. It's the ideal setup for contesters, MCOM operators, and high-demand users who expect more from their gear. The IC7300 combines intuitive touchscreen control, real-time spectrum display, and superior signal purity into one compact rig. Built for satellite, EME, and weak signal enthusiasts, the IC9700 combines all-mode operation on VHF, UHF, and 1.2 GHz. The IC2730A now features a high-contrast black display. It offers everything operators love: true dual-band operation, independent control knobs, and optional Bluetooth compatibility for hands-free operation. The IC718 is a favorite among new hams and portable operators, offering simple operation, rugged construction, and clean audio with DSP filtering. For more information about all of ICOM's great amateur radios, visit icomamerica.com/amateur today. Thanks, ICOM, for sponsoring Amateur Logic.
Yes, sir.
Field Day. That is coming up next weekend.
It is.
Yes.
It is.
That commercial got me so worked up, I ran out to my nearest ICOM dealer and picked up something to play with at Field Day.
Is that just a box?
No, there's a big box over there.
There is a big box over there.
7760 going to be playing with a little bit. So
nice.
Yeah.
You see, yeah. Can't see it. Wow. Those tubes in the way. Here, I'll put it over here right in front of
it. Well, that's all right. It fit just as well over here.
Looks better right here. Looks a lot better on my side.
Yeah, that just came in this week. We'll be doing some video on it. Now, you can see we just unboxed it. I mean, like right before the show tonight.
Yeah.
And
so we got the plastic on the front of it.
It hadn't even been.
Never had the power cord hooked up or anything.
So
the question is, will there be a SmackDown?
You know, being I've on a 7700, yes. I think there's an excellent chance of a SmackDown. Now, as far as weight and the number of knobs, I think the 7700 is the winner.
Well, it depends, I guess, how you look at it.
Yeah.
If weight is a positive thing, one thing you don't have to worry about is it blowing off your desk during field day or anything like that.
Well, that was the chassis of this part. It's not going to blow off anything either. It's pretty hefty. It's a machine for sure.
It's a 200-watt radio.
Yeah.
Like 7700. So, you know, they got some heft. And the power supply is built in as well. So there's a reason it's got a little weight to it. Anyway, that'll be coming up soon. We'll probably take this out for field day, huh?
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking.
Put the 705 up against it.
Yep. I'll be running this, and you run the 705.
Okay.
Of course, you can only run 100 watts on field day anymore. You can't use the full 200 anymore. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'll be running 10, so.
We need to work on this. It doesn't work. And we need to work on this IP technology so I can grab that through here. It's not working.
Well, email.
Yeah.
If we end up with one of these, which right now I don't know that we can wrestle Ray out of it, although it is pretty heavy, you can buy another head and just connect to this one.
There you go.
Yep. Heck, I could buy yet another head.
Yes.
And connect it up via the internet, and as long as you have it hooked up and turned on and to an antenna, that is.
Yep.
I could operate remote.
And it would be the same as sitting right here in the same room with it.
So it's pretty sweet.
Yeah, we haven't really scraped the surface on this, so we'll be talking about it more. And Ray will be here in, I don't know, middle of next month. And we'll be going into it a little more in depth.
Jerry said, so this is the 20th anniversary for Amateur Logic. It's a 7760, and the PW2 going to be the anniversary prizes this year. That'd be some prize.
That would be. By the way, the PW2 is sitting in a box up there. We did not unbox it yet.
Not yet.
Yep.
That can't also use that for field day, though.
So, Mike, you had a familiar topic you wanted to mention tonight, I believe.
Yeah, speaking of field day, and I just wanted to make note here, before I was even licensed, I got in with a local ham club, and I operated field day continuously for the whole duration. I was so amazed and enamored with it. I must have slept 14 hours the next day, because by the time I got home, I was just out of it. Of course, I was a teen back then, and pulling all-nighters wasn't such a big deal, but... Yeah, so even if you're not licensed, get out there to a field day site, and you can operate just as well as any of the licensed operators can. As long as they retain physical control of the station, you can operate, and you can work some contacts. It's a great way to get your feet wet into amateur radio.
A lot of the field day locations will have a GOTA station there, G-O-T-A, on the air.
They do, yeah. But you can talk one of the guys, if you have a favorite type of band that they're operating on, you can twist somebody's arm, one of the operator's arms into operating that station as well. So you don't have to use the GOTA station. The GOTA station is more of a PR thing, but you can operate any of them as long as there's somebody there with you that's licensed.
Yeah, that is true. We'll be doing it. Look for W5AXC, Alpha X-Ray Charlie. And that's next weekend.
Yes, it is.
All right.
Now, I haven't read the field day rules. Is it still... Well, I know for Eastern time, it's 2 p.m., I believe. What's it for Central?
I don't think any of us have read the rules yet this year. Maybe email has.
One.
Yeah,
obviously, it all goes by UTC, but it ends up equating, I think, to 2 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. But link that's on the page will tell you everything you need to know about field day.
Tommy and I like to add 1 hour to that for the starting time.
Yeah, give everybody a little head start.
Yeah, that seems to happen to us as always.
We have added 3-4 hours to it.
Oh, yeah, we have.
But well, that's kind of fun, too, before and after. There's guys that just don't automatically pull the plug. Obviously, they're not operating the field day. I stopped short of calling it a contest because it's not really designed to be a contest. But when you're operating field day, it's from this time to that time, and then it's cut off. But a lot of the stations stay on the air, so it's a good time to just chit-chat with them. Yep.
You could learn something in this segment. Then again, maybe not. This is my 12-year-old Toshiba satellite laptop. It's got a Core i7, so not obsolete. I've updated the memory in it. I've also swapped out the hard drive with a solid-state drive a few years ago. Everything still works except the battery, and it won't take a charge anymore. You never know when you're going to need an extra laptop, like, oh, I don't know, maybe field day. This thing has 18650 batteries in it. I'm just going to replace them. So it took a lot of doing. I used some tools that I had from iFixit. This little tool here to go around the edges. One of these that you'd normally use for like prying a cell phone apart. I used several of these little things that look like guitar picks. I slid these around the edges to keep the thing open as I continued to work. Also, I had to use a little single-edge razor blade to trim around in some places, and a green tweaker. With much groaning and gnashing of teeth and prying, and without really cutting my fingers, I was able to open it eventually. Now, it had batteries in it, and I've taken them out at this point, 18650 batteries. Now, I knew some of them were going to be bad, so what I had to do is separate them. You can see where I cut the batteries apart. They were in three pairs and connected in series. Here's a drawing of what I found, and you can see the red X's there are where I cut the connections so I could individually measure the batteries. I had a couple that were still at 3.48 volts, a couple at 3.08, but a couple at 2.09. It's going to be best just to replace all of these since they're the same age, so you can see where I cut them. Also, you'll see a couple of temperature sensors that were glued on these. I'm going to have to transfer that to a new set of batteries as well. There was a little PC board in here that's got the battery management system on it. I will reuse some of the strapping that's on here, particularly these pieces here where it's going through to solder to the PC board. And I'll have to connect the batteries together. Now, it's not super easy to pull this stuff apart. You can do it, but you're going to tear holes in the strap as you do that. So my first thought was I'll buy some good batteries with tabs already on them. I didn't go for the cheapest batteries I could find. I wanted something that was going to last because no need to go to all this trouble and then not have the batteries last very long. What I came up with after comparing the numbers that are on these batteries with what I could find available, I bought these from Jamaco. These are ICR 18650 2600 milliamp hour 3.7 volt batteries. So I've got to put all these together now, and they've all got the tabs on them here, but they're kind of short. Now, yeah, I can put them side by side, and some of the tabs will go together. I could solder them, and all of these are not going to reach, and I'm planning on using these longer pieces. They've already been cut and trimmed where they'll fit through the PC board. But I needed a little extra strap to make this project happen. maybe I should just go ahead and buy one of those little spot welders. And that's what I did. This is a Duke Create. I don't know why they call it a mash welder. If I had known I was going to do this to start with, I probably wouldn't have bought batteries with tabs already on them. But that's where we're at now. The spot welder, a USB charging cord. We got some really fine grit sandpaper. Actually, I think they call this frosted paper. Okay, well, it's sandpaper. What you do with it is you can clean up the probes when you need to. I call them probes. I think they call them copper needles. Here's a spare set right here. It's just copper, threaded on one end. Not exactly pointy. It's a little rounded at the end. It does come with a little bit of strap here. And that's what I was going after, but just buying strap alone was going to cost some money. And I said, well, I can get this with a spot welder for not a lot of money. $30. It's got a rechargeable battery in it, so I don't have to have a separate power supply. It's all handheld. There's a bismuth end right there. It doesn't have a super fancy display. Just indicators here for automatic or manual mode. When it's in manual mode, every time you hit the button here, it's going to generate a spark or puts a voltage out that causes the spark. If you've got it in automatic mode, it detects when you touch metal with it, times out, and does it automatically, which is what I'm going to try to start with. This thing says it comes with 11 gears. Well, it's labeled gear here, but actually that's, you know, like 11 power levels. You can step through them by pushing this button on the end. You can also step through automatic and manual mode by holding the button at the end here as well. And there's an indicator to show you how much power is on the battery. It's only three LEDs there, but that should be enough to do it. There's a lot of spot welders out there. Amazon had, I don't know how many, a number of them. Some of them looked really good with much fancier color displays. But after I looked at everything and the prices and the reviews, this one seemed to fare pretty well because some of the fancier ones showed up as being a often returned item on Amazon. So I didn't want to take a chance on something like that. So I'll just go with the less fancy display here. So I need three pairs of batteries soldered together. That won't be too bad. We'll start with the first pair. This is a positive end. We can tell that because the center is insulated from the edge of the battery pack. The negative in this particular case, and I assume most 18650 batteries, is right to the case. So we need to put two positives together. And two negatives together. And they do fit right side by side. So I probably didn't need strap on both of these. So do I want to pull that strap off or do I just want to cut it back? It's a good question. I think I'm just going to break it off there. Might be easier said than done. There we go. All right, and you can see on the end here, the strap is connected to this battery. We're going to lay it on the one beside it. And then we're going to hold our spot welder right here on the end and see if we can make a connection. Automatic. Gear is all the way up. We got power. Let's just hold it on here and see what happens. Saw a little spark, heard a little noise. And if we observe, yeah, there are a couple little dimples right there. Another little spark. It says if it's black around the edges, it's too low. if the spots that it melts out are too large, then you're running too much. So I'm going to say I'm running just right. And you need to do this enough times, tack it together, so that it stays, doesn't pull apart. So I'm going to put another one or two of these on here. Let's see if we can get it where you can see the spark when this happens. I don't know if you will or not. I'm going to say don't try this at home, but a lot of people will, like me. But if these batteries exploded, it would not be a good thing. You're not going to see it if it doesn't spark. Well, it doesn't want to spark now. Still got battery. Shut it off. Maybe the tips got dirty. Doesn't look particularly dirty. I don't know. Guess it could get pitted up fairly easy. There we go. Got a little spark at it. You can see where it hit it there. Yeah, that does look like it's going to stay. Let's do the negative now. Be very careful when you do this that you're getting negative to negative and positive to positive. You would not want to try this the other way around. Probably should have measured these batteries before we started. So I'm going to do that now before I go any farther. 3.88. That one didn't do anything that time. I believe we have everything right, although we have not transferred the thermistors yet. Right there. Thermistors. Check. And they don't look shorted out. And we'll start on the positive end. Will it fit back in the case? I believe it will. It's going to take a little work, so we won't look at that on camera. Got it all back together now. We're going to snap it in and see what happens. That's not a good sign. I may have just wasted a lot of time and money. I think I may have found the problem. This apparently is a fuse. I'm going to pull off the back here and see if we can see a blown fuse element inside of there. I don't know what I'm going to do if it is. That does not want to come off. It's hard, almost like ceramic. This is a 3-amp fuse. Don't know if it'll work. I'm going to try to take the fuse element out of there. Let me say, I don't know this is a good idea. Somewhere I was reading online on a laptop battery repair or hacking site that this was a fuse and one type of them. You could put a jumper across here, these two legs, and that would, they called it reset the fuse. I think that would short out the fuse. Not probably not the best idea in the world. So this battery is 4,200 milliampere hours, so that's 4.2 amps. The 3 amps, the closest thing I got. So I'm going to try putting that across there and hope I don't do serious damage or start a fire or something. Looks like it's stuck. All right, both sides of that little 3-amp fuse seem to be attached. There again, don't try this at home. This could be a horrible idea. I don't feel thermal runaway yet. Let's see what happens. So, I was not successful. Measuring the resistance of the fuse didn't lead to anything. I measured no voltages around the fuse, so something else was up. After much more searching, I came across the corrosium.com website. There, I think I found the answer. There's a number of different fuses on these laptop batteries, some 3 terminals, some 4 terminals. This looks most like the one that we're dealing with here. That is an SE fuse D6X or D6T. There's a fuse between these 2 terminals and a resistor terminal right here. If the voltage gets high enough on this terminal, that resistor will heat up and it will melt those fuses. They're suggesting here that you could jump across those 2 terminals and bypass the fuse altogether. That's not really a great idea, but it would allow you maybe to check it. Well, it didn't do any good for me when I stuck that 3-amp fuse link across there. It didn't help me when I soldered the element out of that 3-amp fuse across it. So, short-circuiting it with solder, I don't think it's going to help anything either. What could it be? Back at the top of the website, as an overcurrent protection device, they're probably only going to trigger during catastrophic short-circuit scenarios. Their main purpose is to provide a way for the microcontroller to physically break the circuit if it detects a potentially dangerous condition, like the overheating of cells, and can't stop it by shutting off the FETs. The problem is some firmwares will count the sudden disappearance/reappearance of cell voltages amongst the list of conditions that warrant doing this. If you want to resell a pack, you might end up with a blown fuse. Replacing or jumping them is a pain, so it's a good idea to connect the reset pin of the controller to ground before doing anything of this sort to keep it from overheating. Unfortunately, I didn't read this before I proceeded with replacing the cells in this battery, so I didn't short the reset pin to ground before taking the old cells out. I'm not sure that would have done it because the battery would not take a charge at all, gave no indication that it was trying to charge, so I think the damage was already done. Searching down in the comments, I found one other clue here. Victor said, if the controller blew the fuse, then it's guaranteed to have also set the permanent failure flag in its data flash and will refuse to work until that's cleared. So in this case, I'm stopped dead in my tracks. I don't have the tools or the skills necessary to go in and bit twiddle inside the firmware of a microcontroller on this battery management system. So nothing else I can really do here. I hope you learned something from my experience. I think the batteries and the spot welder work great. I just can't get the battery management system to cooperate. And that's just as important as the batteries.
Wow. Yeah. That's kind of a letdown.
Bummer.
I'm wondering if those 18650s that you took out of the battery pack are okay. Have you tried charging them up on their own?
I haven't had time to. Some of them were, the voltage was kind of up on them, but a couple of them were just over 2 volts. So I don't know. I'll check them and see. You but
can, yeah.
Do they
still have the tabs on them? Do you peel
one? No, I peeled off some of it. Some of them still have the tabs.
My little X-Star checker will check those.
So, I'm thinking the firmware has locked that one out. And you got to go in there and twiddle bits to reset that thing. There's no way, you know, I don't have the firmware.
How do you do that?
You got to know. Tool? I mean, you got to have the code, I guess, to see and try to figure out which bit is needs to be reset and reprogram it. So I don't have a hope of doing that.
I have an upcoming project or which will turn into a segment because I have one of those DJI quadcopters or drones, and it sat in a box too long, and when I went to go charge up the battery, it refused to charge the battery, and because it has one of those BMSs built into it, even though I went inside it and tried to charge the cells manually, it still didn't work. So I'm assuming something shut off in that BMS. And I have a little board, has a microcontroller on it, and I've got to read the article again, but there's a way using that to reset the BMS on that battery pack. So it's probably something similar that needs to be done for yours as well.
Yeah. Unfortunately, a 12-year-old Toshiba laptop, there's not going to be many people that...
Did you look for a replacement battery?
Yeah, I can find a replacement battery for...
50, 60 bucks?
Yeah, 40 or so.
Yeah, they're not too bad.
It's not very expensive, but I'm not going to worry with it now. I've kind of sunk enough money into that project for the time being.
Does it still operate with the adapter just plugged in with no batteries?
So okay. They're running right now.
Here's what it looks like right here. You're on that laptop.
Okay.
Yeah. I still use it. The only reason I really wanted a battery for is sort of like the UPS effect.
In case there's a power blip or something.
Yeah, because I have another newer laptop that I normally use.
Yeah, another UPS up there.
Yep, and that's probably what it'd be running on the field day. So, the spot welder, though, I recommend it. If you need to do some of that battery spot welding there.
You may have twisted my arm because you know my last project, I soldered them,
yes.
Which is a real pain, and you run the risk of applying too much heat to them.
Yeah.
So I just never could justify, I never thought anyway originally that I would have enough need to buy a spot welder like that. But as it turns out, I've done lots of different projects where I've had this either buy them with tabs like you have, or just threw caution to the wind and soldered them directly. But yeah, for that kind of money, I think I'll just invest in one of those.
Yeah, $30 and you get a little strap too. So
yeah, I've used those little battery holders, 18650 holders with the two wires on the end. But the only problem with those is if you got a high current application for it, those wires are usually pretty small on them.
Yeah.
And like I'm fond of saying, I don't need a 3D printer because I got a friend with one.
Yeah, I got a friend with a battery welder.
Yeah, so you don't
need
one.
There you go.
Yeah.
That works out perfectly, doesn't
it? It does.
It does. I've got a Facebook post here. It came from my friend Jerry Boyd, who says, "It irritates me when I see companies advertising amateur radio equipment and are targeting non-licensed people."
Yep.
There's an advertisement on Facebook that's been running this type of advertisement for a while now. I guess it is legal. I don't know. But it is still tempting people to believe that they can just use the radios as they please. They state these radios are military grade, but in reality, they're just an overpriced Bofang radio. And I didn't click on the link and follow that.
They don't tell you whose military it is that they're grading it by.
Well, that is true. That's not cool. I guess they're getting away with it. I don't know that it's legal, but I agree with Jerry.
You don't have to have a license to buy one. And most reputable stores do ask you for your license when you order them. I know Ham Radio Outlet used to.
I wonder if they can refuse you, because I know originally when I was licensed, the transmitter had to be physically disabled.
Well,
in order for you to possess one as a non-licensed amateur operator.
Really? Well, I expect what they are selling there is just wide open and whatever frequency.
On anything like that SDR thing I showed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys know that my most favorite is Aries Alternate Emergency Quarter Coordinator Glenn, KG5CN. He's in the chat room. He keeps me in line. And he also keeps me lined up for special events where we get to practice with our the people and agencies that we serve, city, parish, state, other hams, GMRS users, you name it. Skyborn, NWS, all kind of people, right? We get to practice with them. So those events are called simulated emergency tests, or what some people call SET. And I figured that I would show or take some time to show what that's like from my perspective or my view. Check it out.
Hello, George, Tommy, Mike, Amateur Logic TV viewers. Hurricane season is upon us down here in the south, and every morning starts out the same. Got to get the juices flowing and the coffee going. So this time I'm around, I'm going to be talking about something we perform down here with our people we serve, about a simulated emergency test. But first, it's time to check out the equipment. But even before we do that, we always have a plan. It's the one great thing about the Louisiana organization that's out there. They always do come up with and have a plan, giving you information like an entire PDF with the simulations plan. They don't give you everything, and there might be some curveballs in there as usual, but at least there's a plan. We know what we're trying to test. We know where we're going to be, where we're talking, what modes we plan on using, even though we always might enter make it work mode. But at least there's a plan. So that's the first step. And I must say, Louisiana Aries has their act together in that regard. So in that plan is very good information about what to expect, who will be around, and the actual data about the plan, with some pretty good visuals of a worst case scenario for Hurricane Pam, as well as some forms and information about what the radio plan is for the state, the parish, and other people who might be involved. There's also pre-published forms within the applications, but first things first, the plan. One of the first equipment checks I'm going to perform is to make sure that the RMS VHF gateway is actually up and functioning. It's connecting to the digis in the temporary spot or location, APRSI gate there. And it is there and it is connected. Green is always good to see. We'll also make sure that the antenna's looking okay in its temporary form, in its temporary deployment. Got the ICOM AH8000 up there on one of MFJ's push-up poles. Just enough to hit the repeater. That's about 20 miles that way to my west. So anyway, I did test it. It is connecting. No problems. I sent a message and left a message on the mailboxes as well as Winlink stuff. Now, that's the VHF side of the world. So let's check some other things out. One of the things for sure we have here is our best friends. But on the HF side of the world, there's also the Go Kit that I created a while back. You can check those videos out, which has quite the few things in there that's going to get me on HF all the way to UHF, along with its supporting accessories and bag full of things that'll sustain this or make it work, because all kind of wires and, you guys know, fun things that need to happen. So it's good to have that on an organized kit. Lithium iron phosphate battery, 100 amp hour, still kicking, and the solar charger, 100 watt panels that easily plug into the Epic power gate in there, which will charge it even while you're using it. So all the settings are correct there for the charge gate and voltages, you name it. Again, I covered this in other videos, but this will get us on the HF side of the world, which I'm also going to test out in field day. This is my field day go kit, which is why I keep it going, to make sure all this stuff is going to work if needed. Of course, we need tools, but as you know, they're specialized things. Like the RF side of the world, some balance, maybe some wire, some connectors, some tape, some sealant for coax, you name it. Don't forget about the RF side of the world and also protection. PPE and safety kits. Some of the things I've acquired through the years, some Scotch moisture sealing tapes, and you name it. So don't forget about the RF side. Of course, then there's the normal tools that we all need to do basics things. And then there's the power side of the world, right? 12-volt side has its own requirements, specialized requirements, some wire, some connectors, crimps, tools, and the actual tools that go with them, too. So always have a good kit for power for me, just to make sure we can sustain and keep our what we need to keep working in order. So out on social media, I did post somewhat of a summary with some pictures about what we did at the set or during the set. That was the VHF and UHF stations, DHF stations, along with the connected computer at our Studio C. But most importantly, one of the things we do when we are planning is capture basic contact information as well as talk about the tactics with the team. And that's what I'm going to focus on here.
So it just so happens that our club has some great people like Dave, K5OZ, behind the scenes making the systems that we have actually work. So local, this is a snap from APRS.fi of some of the things that are happening up here. You can see Glenn's got quite a few things at his QTH you are at over in Pearl River. I got a WinLink gateway gone. That's why this official relay station status is there. And my WinLink gateway plus all of the stuff I got running at the house. But this little cluster right here is all at one tower site. And Dave keeps that thing tuned with all his Agilents and spectrum analyzers, you name it. You know, the Smith charts, getting those circles tight. He keeps this running great. There's a bunch of stuff. UHF, VHF, DigiPeters. Each repeater we have, two UHF and one VHF, has its own digital modes. DMR, YSF, D-Star. And they're both analog and digital, one for each. So they have quite an array of stuff up there, and they keep it running, which is awesome. The biggest part of this slide, local, that's the range we're hitting, because we always want to get stuff from the Slidell EOC out to the Covington EOC. That's our next hop, the parish. That's where we send traffic, basically, to make it to the state, if necessary. But there's the regional view. And yeah, right now our repeater is covering probably out from Biloxi to Lafayette. They got pretty good coverage on that thing. But the I've been to the Slidell EOC, just like I said. I've been to the Covington EOC, and I've passed traffic via all of these modes already. Talking to Jim Coleman at the sets and sending him direct voice traffic from the Covington EOC is the last thing we did, plus the WinLink messages. They didn't have a working scenario at the Covington EOC. We hooked up with Mr. Simino, is it, and made it work, basically. And now Russ is there, who's also making it work. In fact, there's a dedicated mailbox now, PBBS, packet station. So the last thing about this slide is, depending on whether or not we're in or out of the affected or impacted area, determines what our role is. We flip-flop roles. If we're in the impacted area, we're trying to get messages out so that the other people can go out and get them too. Because it's likely regionally that we can't talk to each other. HF is going to be shooting straight over our heads. And our VHF, we're pretty much assuming it's going to be dead. We'll work on getting it back, recovery, but we're pretty sure it's not going to be there some kind of way until we go and make it work. Until then, we have other methods. if we're outside of the affected area, tactically, we're helping those people who are inside by offering gateways and things. I saw Angelo here. Angelo runs a Pac-Tor 4 gateway for the WinLink system on HF. The Cellcom people, Mike Ozetti, runs Vera, a multimode gateway, and I run a packet gateway that's got this VHF coverage. So we've got pretty good systems around here to help us flip-flop.
Okay, and now for some results. So at the end, we are able to print a communications log directly from the WinLink system, which is another nice feature of that system, showing what we actually did, the traffic we passed. We were able to pass several forms and formats that the people we serve like, messages to individual hams who were relays and messages and sending messages, and also event type traffic. So again, we find ways to make these things work, right? That's what it's all about. And the results here show communications from VHF, UHF on the GMRS side, as well as the HF communications in digital modes, because the voice side of HF, I could hear people from where we were, was horrendous. That didn't stop us, though. We used digital. We reached out using that tactical information you just saw on networking to send something out, and then the other people got that message via the same form. They reached out as well, since we were in the impacted area. So there you go. Simulated emergency test 2025. Our equipment's ready. We're ready for hurricane season. 7-3. And with every good plan, of course, it takes people to actually make that stuff work. So a huge shout out to Elmer over at the K5ARC Ascension Club and the Washington Parish Hams and the 911 Center out there. They're always involved for sure in W5SLA in Slidell, as well as Sealark in Hammond. So shout out to Russ, WI5ARD, and Glenn, KG5CEN, over at the W5SLA Club, and over here actually with me and Picayune, and Jim Coleman for sending out the plans and informations and having that organization, and then Elmer. So N5 EKF over there. So 7-3.
The brilliance of that network, I just can't overemphasize all the different methods that you can use to connect to the WinLink RMS gateways, HF, VHF, UHF, you name it, and multiple protocols makes it invaluable. And that tactic of being able to flip-flop depending on whether you're in or outside of the affected area, that is so important for people to understand. And we had a perfect example of that in this one. The voice conditions were horrendous, even though we had one of the best rigs. The 7610 was really doing a great job on the HF end. I could hear so many people, but when it came to actually relaying and sending the traffic out, I had to hit a station 300 miles away from us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they did the same, even though they're only 70 miles away from us. So imagine those two going, you know, tactically 300 miles to 1,200 miles out. And everybody's doing that who's inside the affected area, right? We're assuming we're going to get hit by a hurricane. It's going to knock out the local digipeters. We're not going to be talking to each other direct. Mm-hmm. So we go out, right? And if we're not in the affected area, let's say the hurricane hits Florida, somebody over there, well, we'll put up our stuff. They can hit our HF gateways because we're 300, 400 miles away from them. It's a flip-flop, right? We're a bunch of volunteers who help each other out depending on who's hit. That's an awesome network, guys. It just survives. It works every time so far.
That's pretty cool.
Nice simulation.
Yep.
Neat, pretty neat segment, man.
Yeah, I don't know.
Thank you.
You know, we're I'm not in with the Aries or any of the folks around here, but I don't think our system up this far north is that advanced. I mean, I think there are a few people here using WinLink, but I haven't heard much about it lately.
Yeah, I don't even know who the Aries people are anymore. Yeah. You know, we had a guy started one, and then it kind of got unstarted, I guess. I don't know whatever happened to it.
He moved, I think.
Yeah.
Well, George, you know, being an engineer and a tower site person, it just takes constant work to keep those going, keep the backup systems ready. I remember your episode about the generator, you know, having problems. So it's always something, and this club has a good constant group who just keeps going. You just keep pushing, keep making it work, keep figuring out ways, right? Because it's ever-changing. Something's gone wrong somewhere, and that's what we do as hams, right? You find ways to make it work.
And that's why I haven't got involved with any of the groups around here, is because when there is a severe event like that, I'm already going to be. I've got commercial stuff to take care of, and it's public safety too. And speaking of generator failures and such, yeah, I've just been through a couple.
You know, Andy in the chat room is asking, doesn't your repeater site or DigiPeter site have battery backup? Yeah. Let's rewind back to Katrina.
Yeah.
Not for a week and a half.
No. Yeah, that's a lot of batteries.
Yeah.
Right. So we'll find a way to get those other sites at the city, parish, state, Oxcom, feds, you name it, whoever we're serving, we'll find a way to make them work. Whether it's solar power or portable stations like the one you saw in the video, we will make it work. And it ain't going to be fast. It's not like the internet. And it's, you know, you guys know, we're talking 1,200 baud messages, but we're going to get something. If there's nothing, we're going to get something.
But you can send a lot of texts to 1,200 baud.
Yeah. 1,200 baud.
That's right. That's right.
Like putting it to a floorboard if you're normally doing 300.
That's true.
You know?
I remember when my buddy he actually lived in the next road over from you over here. He called me one day. He's like, Tommy, I got a 1,200 baud modem. You got to come see this, man, because we had 300s. It just blew my mind. You can still see it writing across the screen, but it was booking.
Yeah,
that was big time.
Emil, you're not the only one doing a simulation here recently.
You caught that, huh, George?
Yes.
I noticed when I was reading the latest edition of the AWRL newsletter that they send out, that the Utah Aries group had a statewide simulated emergency test as well end of last year. And one of the things they listed in that article was how they merged three adjoining states' efforts, which is great. That's when you realize the area you can cover with the HF sides and the RMS gateways. And then also who you serve. They hook up with hospitals, local hospitals. They hook up with the EOCs and other hams and GMRS, which was a theme of ours, too. We have a GMRS repeater at 630 feet. Might as well use it if it's still there. So check out that article in the AWRL's. It's labeled Utah Aries conducts statewide simulated emergency test. There's actually three states adjoining, plus the services that they serve. So neat stuff. Good to see other people doing it.
We're going to do a little something different here. You know, Tommy, you weren't here last month. Last minute situation kind of kept you away. Did you happen to watch the replay?
I haven't watched all of it. I caught a little bit.
What do you think that is?
I don't know.
That came from Joe Eisenberg. He gave it to me at Hamvention.
Oh, yeah?
You got a chip that's got bent leads on it.
Oh.
You stick them in there, and then you give it a squeeze, and it straightens.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty neat.
He gave me two things. He gave me this, and he gave me this, and it said, give it to Tommy.
little vice.
Yep.
That's pretty neat.
I don't have that camera on, so you have to show it to that camera.
Sorry.
Yeah. PCB holder.
Yeah, both of these were 3D printed.
Yeah, like a little vice thing.
And this one.
Pretty cool. Thanks, Joe.
This one, I haven't figured out how he put it together because, you know, it wasn't all printed at one piece. And same thing with that one. That was separate pieces printed and put together. But you can kind of see how that how that goes together.
That's pretty neat.
That lead straightener, you sure it wasn't print in place?
I don't even know what that is since I have a friend that's got a 3D printer.
Well, you can actually print them and it'll leave gaps where it somehow or another it works. I printed one thing like that before.
I've done some print in place where they use like a coil spring printed out of the filament, and it's meshed with gears, and it's all printed all at the same time. It's pretty cool.
I don't think this is separate because you got these right there. It'd probably pop off. I don't want to try it and break it, but it looks like.
But the springs on that one come out.
This one.
Yeah.
Oh, they do.
Look on the back side.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But it's neat stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah. Thanks, Joe, for watching. Appreciate that.
So,
we might have to hit Joe up for the STL files if we promise not to.
Yeah, he.
If we promise just to use them for ourselves.
Yeah, I think there's some he downloaded. This came in the mail, Tommy. I think email knows something about that. Although it's not from him. Who's it say it from right there?
Our buddies over in Kentucky, maybe?
David Richardson in Kentucky, yeah.
There you go.
All right, it's a Mickey of Pappy Van Winkle. Or maybe not.
We paid it forward. He sent me a hat that time. I don't know if y'all remember.
Wow.
To postcards from Kentucky, David C. Richardson. Awesome.
W9KHZ.
And a couple ball caps.
Tommy, nice. I figured the color schemes might direct their distribution.
Oh, yeah, it's got call signs on them.
Oh, this would be great very for cool. field day.
Sure will. Thanks, man. Really appreciate that. There you That's go. Very cool.
Bluegrass
Thanks
amateur
to the Kentucky
radios.
Guys for. There you go. That's the first one. You got any other hats with that on there?
Nope.
You notice they had to send them direct. They couldn't rely on email to ship them from his place.
True.
Before the dogs got at them.
Well, thanks, David, and everybody.
Right. Yeah, thank you. You snagged a field day for sure. Very cool.
All right.
Nice.
That will come in handy because it's probably going to be like 110 degrees in the shade.
At least.
Here.
At least we got a shower and air conditioner this time.
Yep. That helps out.
And a fully stocked fridge?
Will be.
Yeah. We'll stock it when we get there. If you're watching on YouTube, and you probably are, not everybody watches there, but a lot of people do. There's a share button down there. If you would click that, let your mom and them know.
After the real one gets posted.
Yep. There's a like button down there.
Yep, there is.
And there's also a subscribe.
That's an important one.
Yep.
That really helps us out a lot, if you subscribe.
If you would do that, then you can chat in the chat room with everyone else. You can watch the chat room when we're live streaming, but you can only post in there if you subscribe, and that's to keep spam down and stuff like that. You know.
Yeah.
Well, what else can we say? Well, I've got a nice Amateur Logic shirt. I don't know that you can get one by Field Day now.
Need to get one.
Yeah. I know exactly where you could find one.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Where?
shop.spreadshirt.com/amateurlogic.
You can get some Ham College stuff there, too, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe you're correct, and if you're thirsty and need a beverage that would be suitable for a mug, we've got you covered there, too, if you need a backpack to haul some of your gear in.
Backpacks, jackets. Yep. You don't need a jacket right now, but it's coming.
Yeah, you probably won't want that hoodie for field day this year.
Not for field day. Yeah. Winter field day.
Shop.spreadshirt.com/amateurlogic for all your amateur logic swag needs. If you'd like to see what's going on throughout the month or learn when a new episode's going to be posted, that's pretty easy to do. Mike, how would you go about that?
Follow at Amateur Logic on X or Twitter.
Yeah. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/groups/amateurlogic.tv.
Or groups.io/g/amateurlogic.
Cool. You nailed it.
Yep. You can also check out our show notes and find links to things that we talked about during the show. Plus, just look up and see maybe what episode we talked about a particular topic in. You can find those show notes at amateurlogic.tv/wiki.
If you don't want to get a shirt, for Amateur Logic shirt from the swag shop, you could win one on Ham College. ICOM shirt on Ham College. So, but if you want to do that, send an email to hamcollege@amateurlogic.tv.
That's correct. It doesn't have to be anything special. Just send us an email, say hello. You can put a message in there if you want to. But you do need an email address and a name.
It's only qualifications.
And we don't harvest them. We throw them away after the drawing.
Queue gets cleared out, except for the one that goes straight to ICOM.
I was on Ham Nation this past Wednesday night.
Oh, yeah?
They celebrated the 600th episode.
Wow.
And
wow, that's a lot.
If I'd like to join them, I said, sure. So I dropped in for a visit there.
You stayed through the whole thing just for a little while?
I did.
Cool.
I did. I was on, I don't know, somewhere over 400 episodes. I'm not exactly sure how many, but they're at 600 now, so still going strong there. Any final thoughts before we get out of here tonight, Tom?
Yeah, look for us on Field Day. Whiskey 5 Alpha X-Ray Charlie. We will be there.
And Whiskey 5 Sierra Lima Alpha down here, Slidell, we'll be throwing out the RF.
I hope to make several contacts with y'all this year. So we usually do.
We usually do pretty good. We run into each other.
Yep. Mike.
I wonder if anybody's operated from inside a greenhouse. I might have to try that, but you know what? With the heat being what it is, what they're calling for or forecasting next week, it's like, I don't think I want to be in the greenhouse.
Yeah. I don't think anybody's operated from a greenhouse down here.
No.
What would the tactical call sign be, Mike?
I'll probably use Victor Alpha 3 Echo Yankee because it's shorter by one character.
Really appreciate you watching, and let your friends know about Amateur Logic. Yep. The more, the merrier.
Yeah, and even like I said before, even if you're not licensed, get out there, find a local ham club, and go operate during field day.
Yep, that's next weekend.
It's the 28th and 29th, so it kind of rolls over into the Sunday. So it starts at Saturday. Depending on where you are, everybody starts at the same time. So the times are different for each time zone. It usually runs over to at least noon on Sunday, depending on where you are, of course. Hey, can I show a picture here for a minute? This is one that Chip sent us.
Replacement bubbles.
I'm still laughing at that, Chip. That's a good one. That one's a keeper for sure.
That's pretty awesome.
Again, look for W5AXC during Field Day weekend and W5SLA. And what was your call sign, Mike?
Victor Alpha 3 Echo Yankee.
Okay.
Anybody that comes up with kind of a clever tagline seems to break through pileups easier.
Or if you have a female voice.
Yep, we're going to use a pitch shifter this year.
Yeah, there you go. All right, 73, everybody.
73.
Good luck in the contest.
73.
73.